Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before we get into today's episode, sorry about that, I just want to give a quick plug to direct people to go listen to other inspiring people doing amazing things at my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. We've got over 165 episodes now, and approaching 100,000 downloads. So appreciate all the love on that end. If you want to find out anything that I'm doing, you can do that at my Mount Everest blog, which is on the markpattisonnfl.com website. I am headed off to Mount Everest in 6 or 7 months by the time this podcast runs. Continue to train like an animal and totally jacked up after being postponed from last year into launching March 31st, 2021. And finally, there is also a link on the philanthropy side of things. We have adjusted and created a new campaign called the Millia's Everest, the Lhotse Challenge. And I have partnered with Higher Ground. So excited to get together with them here in Sun Valley. They also have offices in Los Angeles and New York, and it's all about trying to help, in many cases, veterans who have PTSD and other amputee-type situations, that we can bring some money and some awareness around that. And of course, they're at higherground.usa.org. Okay, let's jump into today's podcast. Let me first welcome Butch Whiting. Butch, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark.
Hey, yeah, listen, we're not too far away from each other. And if I had an Apache helicopter, I might just get in it from Sun Valley and do the 125 miles or so all the way into Boise, actually Eagle, Idaho. We're not too far away from each other. But today we go remote. And you are the co-founder of a really, really cool company called Cryptic. And where I wanted to start, though, before we get into that, because a lot of it has to do around outdoor wear, where the battlefield meets the backcountry. I know that's one of your taglines, but you know, I'm always fascinated when I'm talking to veterans, and my hat goes off to you. So much respect to you and all the other guys out there busting your ass to protect and serve and really make this country what it has become, serving 11 years in the Army. I want to go back before you actually entered, you know, prior to the 11 years. And, you know, what was that thing? Where were you at in the stage of life of coming out of high school and trying to figure it all out? You know, like, why was your choice to go in the military? Why that branch? And what was your interest in helicopters?
Well, that's a great question. Normally don't get asked that on podcasts. So I appreciate you kind of reaching further back into, I guess, my childhood and where I came from. I was inspired to go in the military by my grandfather on my dad's side. He was a first sergeant in the 82nd Airborne during World War II. And so from the age of probably 4 years old and on, I was hell-bent on becoming an officer in the Army, because he constantly told me, you need to become an officer. He was obviously a senior NCO, but he saw the advantages also of having a college education, which is not always a prerequisite if you do green to gold. But at some point along that route, you need to get an education as well. And I think that was really what he was driving for. And so I was one of the very first family members to actually go to college. And I got an Army ROTC 4-year scholarship and went to Gonzaga University. And the helicopter aspect of it was later on. I didn't go into college, you know, knowing, hey, I'm going to go to Army flight school and become a helicopter pilot. I actually was introduced to that when I was probably a sophomore at Gonzaga University, and we did an air assault with a local guard unit in Huey's. And it was super, super exciting for, you know, a young guy like I was in college. And I started talking to the pilots after we did this mission, and they basically started to explain to me, you know, well, you can go to Army flight school. You have to be selected, but it's an option and it's an opportunity. So in college is when I started to really dive in and research, you know, what those options were and the different airframes. And I just became consumed by Apache Attack helicopters because it fit my mentality of being basically a hunter, and I was super enamored with what is the most lethal weapons platform on the battlefield. And so, you know, you have to hold your breath because you don't know what you're going to be assigned, what branch you're going to be assigned when you come out of college. It's the same with the academies as well. So the academies are graduating, the various ROTC classes are graduating, and they generate an order of merit list, an OML list. And they basically rank all of the students or cadets from one to whatever number. I think the year I graduated, there was like 5,000. And what they do is they start at number one, and they might go across, and that individual, the OML is based on your performance, your leadership capability that's evaluated the summer prior to graduation, your GPA. You know, there's a whole bunch of factors that come in to generate that OML. And then they just start to fill in the quotas. And so you might have a year where they need and project that they know they need 50 commissioned officers in Army Aviation. And so they start to fill those in. And once they get to 50, then you're going to go to your second choice. And so for me, I put down Army Aviation, Armor, Infantry. And fortunately enough, I was able to get a slot into Army Flight School. And then you're back into competing again. You go back in and you start scratch zero, and you're going through flight school, and they're still testing everything, evaluating everything. And then you do it again, but now it's per airframe. So you put down, I want to fly Apache attack helicopters, or I want to fly Blackhawks, or I want to fly Chinooks. And they might have a class in a year that goes through where no one selected for Apaches, and you go fly Blackhawks. Yeah. At that time, that was how it worked. They've since then adjusted it to try to match personalities and mentalities a little bit more to the airframes and the missions of the airframes. That's the way it was when I was there. So anyway, yeah, that's kind of the lead up into where I landed and really what I was born to do in all actuality. And I loved every minute of it. It's the highest honor I've ever held and probably ever will hold, is leading American soldiers in combat. I was fortunate enough to command in Renegade Troop 43 ACR under H.R. McMaster, who went on to be the National Security Advisor for Trump. And he was an awesome commander. And we raged in northern Iraq and Tal Afar and Operation Restoring Rights. And it was absolutely astonishing, really. And we did some incredible, amazing things. And at the end of the day, the reason why I separated was not because I didn't love what I was doing. It was because I was gone so much from my family. And at one point I had my oldest daughter, who's 6 years old. I was gone 4 out of her 6 years. And my youngest was 3 years old, and I was gone, or correction, 4 years old, and I was gone 3 out of her 4.
Yeah, so I mean, I said that's a tough run. You know, I ironically saw the show American Sniper the other night, and it kind of goes through that balance between he kept going back, and he's got this family, he's got new babies and children. And,
yeah,
I mean it's a stressful time. I also want to drop in really quickly, and not that, you know, you've done really so much more than I've never had to go out and protect our country at all. So anything short of that is not equal. But I had an opportunity to go to the Air Force Academy to play football, but then also go through that whole experience. And I wasn't there. And, you know, you talked about mentorship, and I think that's really important for everybody out there, including myself and you. And that is that mentors, you know, you just never know who you're going to touch. And in your case, it was that grandfather of yours that really mm-hmm. always instilled, you know, the importance of and the value of going to college, number one, but also the military and the great lessons and just experiences that you can, you know, gather out of that. And for me, it was more on the sports side. And so I went to the University of Washington. Once again, I wasn't that far away from you, you know, growing up mm-hmm. in Seattle, going to the UW, you're at the Zags, that's in Spokane, a few hours away. But anyways, we are what we are. We're a product so many times of our environment. That's what it sounds like that what happened to you. Give me the time frame. You talked about Iraq and Afghanistan. So obviously, you know, that was in more recent times. How many years ago did you retire from the military?
I separated officially in 2008. I went into Afghanistan right after 9/11 with the 101st. And then I commanded in, I think it was 06 through about 07 in Iraq. But it all started really in 1996 is the year I graduated from Gonzaga. So then, you know, you back up in there in 4 years. But yeah, that's kind of the time frame we're talking about.
Tell me about what it's like. Just bring me inside the cockpit of an Apache helicopter, and I want you to take me to Iraq. And you've just been given a mission to do X. I'm trying to understand from a non-military person, like what your role in all this was in terms of you're talking about leading. So does that mean the attack helicopters are out kind of in front and trying to blow out all the enemy that are there to potentially harm the guys on the ground? If you could walk me through that, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, well, the mission set really changed during the quote-unquote war on terror and how we employed and fought the airframes. Being out front and setting the conditions was more like the classical, you know, force-on-force, near-peer type fight. But when we started to fight terrorists, it became much more difficult mission set. So, and it morphed, went through when we started in Afghanistan, we went into some really significant fights that were at altitude, which you should know all about. So the air is much, much thinner. And we were forced back in to use TTPs, techniques, tactics, and procedures that really hadn't been used since Vietnam. And quite frankly, when we went in right after 9/11, there was really no skill set around those procedures. And it was running fire and diving fire. We didn't have enough power to come to a hover like you would imagine, where you're sitting left and stacking right and you're unmasking and engaging in the fold of gap and killing a bunch of armor.
And that's because of thin air.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
In the Shawikow Valley, I think the valley floor was around 8,500 feet. And, you know, we were fighting in mountains that went up to 12,500, Taku Gar and those. So we were forced back in to use these techniques that really hadn't been employed since Vietnam, running fire, diving fire, high energy tactics is what that was called. And it was simply because you didn't have enough power to do what we were trained to do down before 9/11, before we went into Afghanistan. There was a few guys that were in the group that actually came from the Cobra community, you know, Cobra helicopters that had some Vietnam era experience. And those guys were forced into taking lead and, you know, basically talking through how you do, you know, rocket engagements and gun engagements and things while you're doing quote unquote running fire. And it was so much so traumatizing, I guess. And there was such a gap that when I returned after my time in Afghanistan on that first deployment, I went back to the captain's career course and I went to the master gunner of the Army, and he was a Vietnam era guy and he had all of his manuals still that were out of production and actually weren't on the Reimers Library. And I wrote a paper utilizing those Vietnam manuals called H-64 Deployment in the 21st Century, high Energy Tactics. And that became a cornerstone for actual training programs that started to fall into place. But we were adapting to the environment and to the enemy that we were fighting, which is very, very difficult. And the rules of engagement were super hard in Afghanistan. You know, you're going in to set a condition. You have the air assault was coming in with the 101st during Operation Anaconda. There was gun trucks, Al-Qaeda gun trucks, sitting on the LZs. And we couldn't engage those trucks because they weren't shooting at us. We had to wait until they shot at us. I mean, it was just asinine rules of engagement. And that's always, you know, something that you're going to hear about. It's been bitched about and complained about forever when it comes to war. But yeah, ultimately, Afghanistan's probably one of the most beautiful countries that I've ever been in. I could see the Winter Olympics happening there if it wasn't, you know, surrounded with warlords and people that are very extremely corrupt and so on. I'd love to be able to take my family back to Bagram sometime just for them to see that area. But yeah, it was a really super interesting time because we weren't necessarily trained for the conditions that we were forced to fight in. But we rapidly pivoted and we rapidly accelerated And then we continue to adjust and we continue to improve on our TTPs. And now I think that there's a lot of tools in the toolbox of Army aviators that wasn't there before the war on terror started.
Yeah. Wow. Incredible. I want to ask you about a guy by the name of Josh Cleghorn, right? So I know we're going to get into this. This evolving story for anybody that's listening right now is that there's a he's co-founder now with a really cool company, Cryptic, with Butch. But let's go back to like were you in the same unit or what was that connection point that you guys came together on?
Well, the connection with Cleghorn starts actually when I was the aide de camp for General Sinclair, who at the time was the commanding general of the Army Aviation Warfighting Center. And I was leaving that position to go take command of this unit that was going to go pick up 8 brand new Lot 8 longbows from Mesa, Arizona, the factory, and go to Fort Hood, Texas, and spend 6 months there learning how to fight these brand new premium airframes. I, in that position, started to stack the deck for my guys that I was going to have as my warrant officers. And so I reached out to Human Resources Command and basically I had a slot or I had 4 slots for junior warrant officers. And I basically went in and said, hey, I want these 4 guys to get assigned to Fort Carson, Colorado. And Cleghorn was one of those guys. He says he was number one, but I don't know if he was number one or number 4. But the bottom line is Cleghorn was one of my junior warrant officers. He has a really interesting story because he came from Navy Special Warfare. He was enlisted in the Navy doing clandestine missions with CIA and other units that are not even in Tom Clancy books. But he dropped his packet to become a warrant officer in the Army. And so he'd actually come from Navy Special Warfare into Army. He was selected into age 64s. And our story starts when I went and took command of Renegade Troop 43 ACR, and he was one of my junior warrants. Through that, he stood out on a number of fronts. He was an extremely audacious and very good and skilled warfighter. And we also found this common ground and passion that we had for the outdoor industry and, well, actually for hunting. That's really what it fell on, is that we both really, you know, hit the, I guess, a common thread with regards to our passion for hunting, and not just hunting, but expeditionary type hunting and austere adventures. As we moved into Iraq, the bottom line there is Cleghorn ended up, we just ended up spending a lot of time together and flying a lot of missions together and, you know, winning a lot of battles together. And when we weren't fighting and flying, we would daydream and reminisce about, you know, hunting and being in the outdoor industry and how cool that would be and just forming a relationship. The rest of the interesting story with Cleghorn, while that's all going on, which is kind of where Cryptic starts, he had already assessed for the 160th, which is U.S. Army Special Operations Aviation, or SOAR. And so when we got back from this deployment that we spent all this time together, he actually went to the 160th and flew Little Birds. And he was inserting U.S. Spec Ops Tier 1 Black Soft, both Navy Special Warfare and Army Special Warfare, onto targets just as a slick guy. So a lot of the connections and relationships that Cryptic has that are at kind of the hatchet throwing level are guys that Cleghorn was inserting on target that now have kind of grown up in the ranks. And in some cases they're still in some cases they've separated, but the bonds and relationships that we have as a company back into those organizations were really formed through that combat experience that otherwise you wouldn't have a relationship with. You couldn't walk into some of these organizations.
Yeah, no, I get that. Relationships are everything, right? And and my question is, a lot of times, like, this is at the time, now we're going back, you know, a few years, but I've started a couple of different companies. And so I get what that's at. And like you said, you're daydreaming, you're thinking, but there's always a pain point. There's a gap, right? And you're going, God, you know, what's missing is blank. And so as you guys are out in the field, I'm sure in tough conditions in Iraq or Afghanistan, where is it that as you guys are having all these chats, because you're together all the time and communicating, how did you guys come about it? I know you're probably reminiscing about, God, it'd be great to be out in Colorado hunting or Montana or someplace else. But in terms of that gap, I mean, how did you connect those two pieces together to then like, well, if maybe we could come up with this idea to fill that void?
Well, the war on terror accelerated everything across the entire spectrum for war fighters. So from weapons and communications and just systems in themselves, platforms, vehicles, body armor, you name it, there's this just giant snowball of improvements that are starting to happen, including into apparel. And the lead on the apparel improvements was really happening at the spec ops level that then would spiral down. But we saw a lot of those improvements that were happening and going, dude, that would be epic to have if you're in the backcountry elk hunting, or if you were, you know, doing whatever type of hunting adventure. So we
what? Tell me what that would be.
Well, one of a real easy one is built-in knee systems, right? When Cryptic started, there was no built-in knee systems, and people were wearing like knee systems that you'd buy at Lowe's or Home Depot, and they're clumsy and they fall down, and especially if you're hiking and on and on. So we actually were leading the fight on the charge out, taking some concepts and ideas that were starting to appear in military uniforms with built-in knee systems to bring into the civilian hunting market. Another one was an adjustment in a waist system, a waistband, right? So if you go on a hardcore backcountry hunt, let's say for 14 days, you're going to probably end up losing quite a bit of weight, as you can imagine. And so now those pants that fit, let's say they were 32 or 34 when you started, pretty soon they're falling off your ass. And you either got to cinch your belt down, which is super wicked uncomfortable, or you got to wear suspenders. So we had a built-in waist system that as you started to shed weight on an expeditionary type hunt, those pants, you was like form-fitting around. That was another example. Another one was pocket placement, simple, easy stuff, right? We saw pocket placement that was designed specifically for guys that were setting like we are now in an aircraft, and you needed to access certain things, which is no different than a guy sitting in a tree stand or a deer blind. And how smart would it be to have that when in the hunting market? So there was all these ideas and concepts that we saw that was like, that makes all the sense over here. And actually the big break that you kind of were alluding to is when I wrote this like 25 page prospectus / business model. And there was one sentence in that business model that Cabela's actually just lost their noodles on. And that was to spiral features and functions out of special operations apparel into the civilian hunting market. And Cabela's, when they saw that, they reached out to me and they said, we have tried to do this hunting tactical crossover, but we've never been able to pull it off because we just don't have any authenticity. And so we'd like to talk to you about doing a program with us. And that was like when we moved from a concept, that was the beginning of what I call our hobby phase. That's when we moved into hobby phases, when we started with Cabela's. And that's that one sentence was the game changer.
Matt, I mean, I think timing is everything to connect with Cabela's. And then you've also got all these people, these soldiers out in the field where you can, you know, literally field test. It is amazing. Today, I was on your website and it's incredible. So you've gone from this concept. I mean, it's always the evolution of any kind of company, but you've taken it from you know, an idea to really reality. And everything is really based around this whole camo theme. And then all these different, you know, missing parts and pieces that you're talking about, like the knee and the pockets and other things like that, that really fill that gap. Why is the camo part? I mean, I guess if you're out and you're hunting, camo is important for anybody. You're trying to become invisible out there. But it seems like every single piece of equipment that you guys has this whole camo theme around it. Is that like the driving force to continue to sell product?
It's a driving force. We have a great, you know, camouflage assortment that was really driven by the U.S. Army camo improvement effort. And we have the only camo that's in the civilian market that's been extensively tested by the Department of Defense and selectively used by special operations, both U.S. and coalition. But to answer your question, even though it's fantastic and we're in movies and video games and, you know, all over things that I never imagined, it's really just a paint job, right? And so what matters is what's underneath the paint job.
Right.
And we've got some amazing apparel that is extremely advanced, all the way down to polycotton twills that's just meant for hot weather. So, yeah, to answer your question, camo's a huge part of Cryptic, but no, it's not. Everything has to be Cryptic. I can see Cryptic gear, and we have it as well in solids. It just has our logo, and it's just really good premium gear.
Yeah, I know a lot of this, you're talking about backcountry, and then specifically when you kind of go down one level, it's really around hunting and that type of thing. I'm interested in from my mountaineering standpoint, mm-hmm. because obviously I experience things all the time when I'm out there. I live in some valleys. We were talking about earlier at 6,000 feet, I'm up on the mountain every single day. Yesterday I was in a driving rainstorm, got wet as hell. And to be able to have, I'm sure, some of these different products that look cool, they feel great, and they actually have a function that they perform is invaluable. I mean, it's equipment is just a major, major, major component of what we do in the mountains.
Well, guys that mountaineer or ski get it. They get it easily, right? Our most premium program is with Scholler Fabric and Scholler Technologies out of Switzerland. And that collection is printed in Germany. And we're the only collection that Scholler has that is in the hunting category. They're really, really advanced and very, very expensive as well, right? But the technologies that are built in there, you're a perfect candidate for somebody that would appreciate, you know, sea change type laminates that are breathing when you're aerobic and then more less breathing and retain heat when it's cold, the stretch of the various fabrics, the durabilities. So at the end of the day, we have numerous collections, and really it's about what you're doing and where you're doing at, the activity level and the environment you're in. We have collections that are super, super ideal for Texas or Africa, thorn stickers, or areas that are super hot weather collections, all the way up into premium cold weather collections. And then what I'll call a layering system, which our most premium layering system is that Scholler Altitude collection. So you take the paint job off that, you could go find similar products with brands that aren't in the hunting community, Marmot, Salomon, Black Diamond, those types of brands. But that's the only place you're going to find them. So yeah, we got some really high-end stuff. And we've also got some just simple stuff that isn't going to get torn apart in stickers and brush.
Yeah, I mean, layering is everything in mountaineering and being in the outdoors. I know that well. And it's a hard lesson if you don't know that and you're right. Stuck up there somewhere and you're not prepared. Where can people find all this gear? I know you have a website, cryptic.com, and we'll do the show notes. We'll spell it out the way it's supposed to be spelled out. But are you also in retail?
We are. Yeah, we're at retail, you know, Sportsman's Warehouse, Shields. There's a whole bunch of different retailers. I think we on our website, we have a link you can go to, and it'll show you stores near you. One of the things about that, though, is that all the collections are usually not in one location. So the only place you can find everything across the entire spectrum is at cryptic.com.
We started at the very beginning when I was doing my little plugs for my stuff, and I talked about that we've come together with a collaboration with Higher Ground. Tell me what your connection, they connected us. Thank you, Aaron, if you're listening. But they're the ones who connected me with you. And, you know, I've been talking to a lot of really interesting people, and I'm just so fascinated and impressed with the organization that they have right now. But how is your connection? I know you're obviously tied in from the military standpoint, but, you know, why did you want to come together and support that organization?
Well, Higher Ground, the end state is that they're phenomenal and their reputation precedes them. We have a number of 501c3s that we work with and support, but Higher Ground, I don't know what the number of years are, probably 5 years we've been working with them. And I just truly believe that their heart is in the right place and they accomplish projects and things that maybe other 501c3s cannot accomplish. They're a great entity to work with and also to see the results from. And the leadership there at Higher Ground is by far probably the best of all the 501c3s that Cryptic personally works with.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. My daughter has epilepsy, and so I did a fundraising event last year called Amelia's Everest, trying to raise the height of Mount Everest, 29,029 feet. We raised it in a great event, and then I was approached, and the net is we decided to work together. So it was great. So listen, I am so appreciative for you coming on the website, or I'm sorry, coming on the pod. I want to promote your website, which I'm going to do, and look forward to seeing your stuff, you know, just continue to thrive out in the marketplace. And it's so well done. So congrats on that.
Yeah, thank you very much. And when you're down here in the Boise Valley, don't be a stranger. Come by the office and see us.
I won't. Okay, there is the co-founder and CEO of Cryptic, Butch Whiting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, buddy.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.